And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, last week there was really quite a remarkable story that I'm sure you noticed. It turned out that a couple of years ago, a 22-year-old graduate student in Australia, a physicist, an astrophysicist, noticed an anomaly. And by the time he got done exploring the anomaly, he discovered something that every hour is emitting light for exactly 18 seconds. And then the light gets turned off. And a minute later, it gets turned on again for 18 seconds. And this goes on continuously. And such an event has never before been observed in the millions of observations that we've made, the world has made, the astronomers have made. Nothing like that has ever been seen. And while it's possible that there is some sort of natural reason for that, something to do with black holes or the collapsing stars, it's also possible that some consciousness put something up there. Anyway, it's been seen now. But something that has never been seen is a mouse that wears clothes. Of all the experiences that humans have had with mice, there is not one recorded instance of a mouse wearing clothes that's been seen by a human being. But in Tennessee, one of the boards of education in Tennessee ruled that the anti-Nazi graphic novel Mouse should be banned from the schools, and 15 and 14-year-olds should not be allowed to read that anti-Nazi book because a couple of the drawings depict naked mice. Now, that sounds peculiar until you realize that what they're really saying is we shouldn't be teaching kids the reality of racism and what it leads to. I'm sure you noticed that.
Yeah. That's, you know, one of the things that it's a trend that we've been seeing. And whether this was a pretext or whether this was just some of that old-fashioned Puritanism, we don't
know.
Naked
mice? Puritanism? Even then, well, Puritans saw naked mice.
Well, Mickey Mouse has gotten away with not wearing a lot of clothes for a long time, but it's still, this is a trend of school boards not wanting to have students learn about what effect is the real world. Only things that they're comfortable with do they want students to know or to have. It was, you know, the National or the American Library Association for years has been doing a week called Banned Book Week. And we've seen books really all across the political spectrum that have been attacked, and they want to take them out of school libraries. There's one, I can't remember which state it was or which place, that there was a letter went out, and they want to know all of the books that the library has involving gay people, as if they're going to be able to purge them. Although there was a legislator in Virginia a couple weeks ago who said we should be burning some of these books. This is part of a very disturbing pattern. It's not just racism, it's authoritarianism. It's thought control, mind control. And of course, one of the things that they want to control is what you were referring to, is that bad things didn't happen under white people's rule. And of course, by banning this book, which was a Pulitzer Prize winning book, they've created more interest in the book. My understanding is that within a day or two, Amazon sold out of the book. So it's going to get a wider coverage. But the school board didn't back down. They're continuing on this type of thing. And, you know, we've seen this as part of critical race theory, that they don't want certain things taught about really how Jim Crow or slavery really worked, that everybody was kind of nice to each other type of thing. You know, Texas is one of the leading places. Remember, Texas is a place where they wouldn't tell the slaves that they had been freed. The Civil War was over. That's why we now have that holiday called Juneteenth, when they finally figured it out. So this is part of a larger march towards authoritarianism that is greatly fueled by, as you indicate, racism on a large scale.
Well, in line with what you're saying about drive toward authoritarianism, the legislature in Arizona has just had a bill introduced there that, if passed, would give the legislature the right to reject any vote, no matter what the result of the vote is, if they didn't like the result.
Right. Yeah, they would call in a special session to either accept or reject the vote of the people. You remember, Arizona's the place where they had, what, three recounts, and they went and had this cyber ninja group hired that didn't know how to do anything. By the way, cyber ninjas has folded now. They've laid off all their people. They did this whole, who knows what kind of a audit of the votes, and found out that Joe Biden actually got more votes in Maricopa County than originally planned. But that doesn't stop them. They still say he didn't win there. Pennsylvania, they still want to recount the votes. Some of the people that have headed that are running for higher office, for governor, for senator. They've bought into this concept, this Newt Gingrich, Steve Bannon concept, that only Republicans should be allowed to win elections. And everybody else, no matter what the vote count, can't be the legitimate winners. Part of it is because they live in this bubble, this information bubble, where they don't see other people, or they don't understand, or they don't interact with other people, or they don't dialogue with other people who have contrary thoughts. They're just self-affirming, and they keep swirling further and further down the wormhole on this thing.
I don't think that it's the case that they don't see other people. They see other people. They just think that those other people are subhuman and shouldn't have the right to destroy life as they want to lead it, which is to, you know, despoil the earth and oppress and exploit whatever they want to. But that's what they object to. Look, in Florida, one of your favorite states, the Secretary of State refuses to certify the election of a guy who was elected to serve starting in this legislative term until after the legislative term. So in other words, even if they are forced to concede that the vote took place, if they have the power, they keep them from taking the seat, the person who won, if it's not part of their group.
Yeah. You know, I'm still reminded that since the last congressional election, Jim Bognut has not yet conceded to Matt Cartwright. He's still willing, you know, he wants to run against him again, but you kind of wonder that the hypocrisy is, why are you running against him if you didn't think you lost the election?
Well, because the term is up, he wants to get reelected to the next term.
Yeah.
In the same minority way. Well,
yeah.
There's supreme hypocrisy for part of it, but of course, some of it isn't hypocrisy. People truly believe that they're superior, but more than that, it's that they believe that there are millions of humans who are really subhuman, who don't have the judgment or the ability to judge what their own lives should be, what their own destiny should be. And they have to be led by the nose. But of course, that's all because they've been told this by people, right-wing ideologues, libertarian ideologues, who really know better and who realize that the majority of people do know what's going on. And if they were permitted to do what they know they ought to do, the corporate interests will be battered, because it is not in the interest of most people to follow the dictates of the corporations and their profit-seeking at all costs, you know, way of life.
Well, you know, what I always call it is that they divide it into us's and them's. And the them's are the others, and are not deserving of being really fully recognized, as you say, as people. You know, we've seen this in higher education for years. We have legacies, but no minorities. We see where the Supreme Court is going to take up the affirmative action issues again and say, you can't consider race in any way, shape, or form, no matter how discriminatory the actual things are. I always call it the, you know, the heads white win and the tails blacks lose. It always works out that way. And we're, you know, now we're seeing it with the Supreme Court, with the opening of a justice seat, with Justice Breyer retiring, and Biden having made the pledge that he was going to appoint a black woman, which has never happened before. And of course, the right wing and the ideologues have gone absolutely bonkers, you know, conveniently forgetting that that Ronald Reagan made a pledge that he was going to appoint a woman to the court, that there was a pledge that they were going to, or an implicit pledge that when Thurgood Marshall retired, that they were going to appoint a black to the court.
Well, before Reagan appointed a woman, no woman had ever served on the court.
Right.
Before Marshall was appointed, no African American had ever served on the court.
Right.
And
right.
I remember that when Thurgood Marshall was appointed, plenty of right wingers said that he was completely unfit to serve.
He had no judicial experience.
No judicial experience. He had only argued before the court about 100 times.
Yeah. You know, of course, Earl Warren didn't have any judicial experience. William Douglas didn't have any judicial experience on the court. There are plenty of examples.
My guess is it's better if a bunch of judges who don't have judicial experience, because they bring the experience of life apart from the experience of life as a lawyer or a judge to the court.
Well, that you know, the experience of a woman is what Ruth Bader Ginsburg brought to the court. The experience of someone who grew up, you know, in a hard way was what Justice Sotomayor has brought to the court. Not one of these things where people have had the privilege, you know, to go through the quote unquote right places and prep schools. And of course, none of these people complained when Donald Trump said, I'm going to only appoint people that have been vetted by the Federalist Society, which, you know, is funded by dark money and those corporatist interests that you mentioned. And unfortunately, what gets lost in the shuffle is the qualifications of the women that are being thought of as the possible replacements for Judge Breyer. By the way, I had done a little bit of research, and there have been 114 persons who have served on the United States Supreme Court in the 220 some years that we've had a Supreme Court. And of that, exactly two were black, and exactly four were women. There were
all of whom served in our lifetimes.
Yeah,
and not before.
Yeah, eight were Jewish, non-Christians, but two of them were the women.
That started with Brandeis.
Yeah, Brandeis, Cardozo, Frankfurter, Arthur Goldberg, Abe Fortas, and then the more recent ones: Ginsburg, Breyer, and
Kagan.
Yeah, but you know. Otherwise, I've been dialoguing with people who are absolutely outraged that Biden isn't saying he would take the most qualified person, whether it's black or white, as if a black woman couldn't be the most qualified. We're looking at some with some very stellar qualifications. Just Judge Jackson, who recently got appointed to the Circuit Court, the Supreme Court Justice from California, Leandra Kruger.
Anyway, what does it mean to be most qualified? What is most qualified? You know,
the most qualified. You know what they used to say about appointing a judge? That the judge, the person who got appointed, was either the brother-in-law or the the law partner of the person appointing them. You know, like the governor.
Right.
Yeah. They've always had some political aspects to it. I mean, Lincoln appointed Salmon Chase to the court just to get him out of his hair and take him out of politics on there.
And also, it plays to the notion that judging is not political. That somehow there's some dimension that exists apart from your living experience, apart from everything that helps you form your ideas, your ethics, your approach to life, that somehow none of that counts and all of it is ignored by judges, where the evidence of almost every case and certainly every era is that judging is as political as running for president or running for the legislature, and that the judges follow public opinion. They don't believe and don't enforce some sort of pie-in-the-sky platonic ideal of justice. There is no such thing. If the court could find that segregation was legal, then you would think that that would be it forevermore, and it would never be illegal. And yet, a few generations later, it's illegal. The only thing that changed was the politics of the day. The judges followed the politics of the day. When the New Deal legislation was passed, the court found it unconstitutional until they discovered 8 years down the line that if they kept that up, they'd be put in the minority or they'd be forced to retire. And all of a sudden, it was constitutional.
Yeah, they used to say that the court follows the elections.
Right.
You know, I mean... You talk about, you know, Wilson appointed Brandeis, but he'd also appointed a guy named McReynolds, who couldn't stand, who was an open anti-Semite, who wouldn't, who would turn his back whenever Brandeis talked from the bench, wouldn't talk to him outside of the courtroom. You know, you get people like that. And, you know, one other thing, when we talk about a lot of the lower court judges that Biden has been appointing, and he's been doing it at a record pace, is he's included a lot of people who were public defenders rather than prosecutors. You know, heretofore, almost everybody that's gotten to be a judge has some prosecutorial experience or working for the government instead of working, challenging the government. And Biden has changed that dynamic greatly, which is good. I work with a woman who is a federal public defender for 30 years. And, you know, her view on things is, from her experience, is, you know, dramatically different than what you see when people run for office like DA or state attorney general.
That's right. And it's very important because if you're involved in civic action, if you're, you know, working for environmental causes, you're working against racism or whatever, and something comes up in court, it matters who, if you need to have a lawyer, it matters who your lawyer is. If you go and choose, if you're, you know, let's assume you're fighting the oil and gas industry, you'd be a silly person to choose a lawyer whose experience is defending the gas industry to challenge the gas industry. His or her mindset is not to challenging the gas industry. It's to defending the gas industry. And there's no way in hell that they're going to be able to attack the gas industry as your attorney.
Yeah.
First of all, you're only one. They probably have 10 others who are gas industry clients.
Yeah. I mean, every once in a while you get somebody who represented them from the inside and has been disheartened by what they've seen. But pretty much that doesn't exist. It's only that's the rare instance that you get.
And here in Pennsylvania, we have just this week a very interesting example of the political uses of the law in a case that a ruling that the Commonwealth Court, which is the second highest court in Pennsylvania, came down with that Trump immediately jumped on and hawked to the skies, they found, the majority, 3-2, found that the voting by mail was unconstitutional. Not nearly 3 million Pennsylvanians voted by mail in the last election, in the presidential election. And the court ruled, nope, that was unconstitutional. And the ruling was 3-2. All the Republicans, or the three that said it was unconstitutional were Republicans. The two that said it was absolutely constitutional were Democrats. The case was brought by 12 Republican legislators who had themselves proposed and voted for the law that they now said was unconstitutional.
Right.
And that's quite amazing. Who pulled the wool over their eyes when they were proposing this law? Who caused them to do this unconstitutional thing?
Well, what caused them to bring the law? I don't know about doing that, but I know what happened. They didn't think it was going to affect elections. And when they saw how the elections came out, they decided to try to undermine that which they had done. Because, again, they thought that only they should be elected or their people.
Right.
So that's consistent.
Well, for them, but I'm talking about the judges who went along with it because, you know, it's very interesting. If you read the ruling and you read the dissent is real interesting. It says, look, there's a provision of the Constitution in Pennsylvania that says that the legislature can add classes of voters and can enact ways in which these new classes of voters can vote. And that's what happened here. And the majority has just ignored the fact that that clause exists in the state constitution. But you can't ignore it. And if you read the majority decision, that's exactly what happened.
If you're in the majority, but that'll go to the state Supreme Court, and I'm pretty sure it won't pass muster because the state Supreme Court has a Democratic majority.
Precisely, and they will then look at that clause. In other words, the Republicans, in an effort to buttress the Republican Party's legislative desires, electoral desires, decided to ignore the fact that there's a clear sentence, and there's a history behind it, but there's a clear sentence that says the legislature has the right to do this. That's in the Constitution. And they said, no, the legislature doesn't have the right to do this. So now some other group with a different political interest will say, well, wait a minute, you overlooked this sentence. And so it turns out the ability to read is also political.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we're getting back to what you read, too, right?
Yeah.
We're back to the, you can't read the books that we don't want you to read.
That's right. That's right. And imagine now that 40 years from now, you're going to be confronted with a group of people who grew up homeschooled or grew up in these public schools or private academies, church-run academies, in which they don't know the history. Of course, they haven't been taught the history. They haven't been taught logic. They haven't been taught critical thinking skills.
They haven't been taught science.
They definitely haven't been taught science. Well, how do you think they're going to approach judging? You're guaranteeing a reversion to the Dark Ages before all these things were discovered, because for these people, it won't have been discovered. Nobody will have taught it to them.
Yeah. Well, that goes to my theory that, when we've had a lot of these Republicans are taking positions that they know better over time. They know that the difference about when they're right, when they're wrong, they don't, they put it aside. But what you're doing is you're training a new generation that doesn't know the difference.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the Marjorie Taylor Greens and the Lauren Boberts and the Madison Cawthorns. Those folks don't know the difference. Their worldly experience doesn't open up that world for them.
So what do you do then?
Well, that's why you need to broaden education out The only way
but that's why the struggle for the school boards is so important. The right wing understands it. The right wing's got their eyes out two generations.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly where I was going with it. You know, Steve Bannon is out there telling people you got to run for local office. And the other thing they're doing, though, is that people who don't agree with them that win local office are being intimidated. They're being threatened. They're with violence. Their families, they're being harassed. People standing outside their homes, taking pictures, posting their private information online, that sort of thing to drive them out.
By the way, that's an American, that's a, clearly in the American tradition. People say, how come there was really no anti-slavery organizing in the border states and in some of the deep southern states before the Civil War? And if you examine it, you discover that the reason for it was that people who were anti-slavery picked up and left. It was difficult to live in these communities because of violence perpetrated against by these slave owners against people who challenged slavery. And rather than stay and take their lives in their hands, they picked their families up and they went someplace else.
Well, that's what's been studied, that we were starting to have that separation in the United States, the Great Separation, where people were living in states, they're going to more rural states. Remember the guy in the O.J. Simpson trial, the policeman,
he relocated to Idaho, Idaho,
right?
Where plenty of white supremacists.
That's right. The only thing that's been happening, well, is with the pandemic, things have been reversing because many people just decided to move to some of these states, not into the rural areas, but like places like Boise now is a hot spot. Texas.
All the more reason to gerrymander these states to guarantee that the areas where segregationists and other right wingers live will have disproportionate representation in their state legislatures.
Yeah. Alabama, just the Supreme Court just said you've overdone it. We've had other states. Ohio said it, that they've overdone it. North Carolina, they're still up in the air about that. So we're going to have to see. Of course, Pennsylvania, the legislature decided we'll take that away from the courts. We want to gerrymander the courts and break them up into districts, things like that. So that's the appellate courts I'm talking about.
Well, supreme hypocrisy this week, supreme hypocrisy.
Yeah,
unfortunately looking into a situation where it won't be hypocritical, it will just be awful by people who sincerely believe the awful things they say.
Right, and people think that this is terrible stuff, and it's overtaken a lot of the better news, the good news this week about the economy growing at fastest rate since Ronald Reagan. That 14.5 million people have signed on last year to the Affordable Care Act, which if it wasn't there, wouldn't have been available to them when they lost their jobs. And, the infrastructure bill is starting to trickle in. We saw what happened in Pittsburgh this week where a bridge collapsed just before the president got there to talk about how they're going to spend
bridges, right.
Of course, the Republicans then are taking credit for this infrastructure bill that they didn't vote for.
But they voted against. Not only did they not vote for it, they voted against it.
They voted against it, yeah.
Well, there you go. Supreme hypocrisy.
That's it.
But we're coming to the end of our time.
That's not hypocritical. That's fact.
That's fact. So we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week, Jake.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.